This is your home for Progressive Talk. AirAmericaRadio.com.
Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch reporting that Fox News is going to be doing a half-hour expose on me. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. Yes, it's an entertaining story. President Musharraf, Benazir Bhutto, quite upset, among others. We'll get into that. There's a lot going on in the world. Tomorrow on the program, Ambassador John Bolton will be with us, and Laura Flanders. Today, in our second hour, Mark Green, his book, Losing Our Democracy, How Bush, the Far Right, and Big Business Are Betraying America, and How to Stop It. In our third hour, we're going to have about a 45-minute conversation with Naomi Wolf, The End of America, a letter of warning to a young patriot. It should be interesting. Right now, William Clark is with us. Paul Kengor is with us. He's the author of a new book about William Clark. It's called The Judge, William P. Clark, Ronald Reagan's right-hand man for all practical purposes. Paul Kengor, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom. Thanks.
Good to have you. In fact, the subtitle of the book is Ronald Reagan's Top Hand. I have the book right here. I've spent some considerable time with it. First of all, there's two things. One, in the news release that came out with the book, you took quite a swipe at Hillary Clinton, saying that there is no candidate, none, in the history of presidential politics as radical as Hillary Clinton, and going on to say that she must be defeated. I'm wondering why you do that in a news release about William Clark, who was Reagan's top aide and ultimately national security advisor for so many years.
Yeah, actually, maybe we should have talked about this beforehand. I wrote an op-ed piece on Hillary and abortion, and I mentioned in the tagline of the piece that I've got two books out, one on the faith of Hillary Clinton and the other on Bill Clark and the judge. So that would go more with the book on Hillary.
You might want to talk to your publisher, because they've got the Hillary information in the press release that comes along that we received with the book on Bill Clark.
Okay.
So anyhow, just a heads up. Well, Nikki's,
Then
let's talk about William Clark.
Sure.
Here's what I don't get. It seems to me that William Clark was a party to, in many ways, a number of what, according to the September 30, 1984 Brussels Tribunal conclusions, and I'm assuming you're familiar with that, the convention that was actually moderated by a whole bunch of Nobel laureates, Sean McBride from Ireland, George Wald, Nobel laureate from Harvard, Ugardo Jarin, Nobel laureate from Peru, it's just a huge list. That the Reagan administration was guilty of a number of crimes, very specific crimes. The invasion of Grenada, for example, violated the UN Charter Articles 2, 3, 2, 4, and 33, as well as Articles 18, 20, and 21. The UN ruled that as well. The threat of invasion of El Salvador and Nicaragua was illegal. The intervention in El Salvador was illegal. Violation of Article 1, Subset 2 of the UN Charter. The participation in military operations in Nicaragua was illegal. And the International Court of Justice, pulling out of that and refusing to acknowledge their jurisdiction when they tried to stop Reagan with regard to Nicaragua was illegal. Mining the Nicaraguan harbors was illegal and condemned by the United Nations. How can you write so glowingly about a man who arguably was a war criminal?
Well, Bill Clark left the national security position on October 13, 1983. We invaded Grenada on October 25th, 1983, so he actually was a national security advisor yet at that point. In fact, Clark, what really stands out about Clark's period at the National Security Council, he began January 4th, 1982, and he left in early October 1983, is that Clark actually, his most notable mission in all of South America, Latin America generally, was a secret mission to Suriname that we report for the first time in this book. It occurred April 1983. involved Clark and three or four other people, and they went to, it's amazing how Suriname, which most people can't even find on a map and have never even heard of, an almost identical situation to Grenada, where the Soviets were involved, Cuba was involved, there was even a Libya connection, and in fact, because the United States had an Alcoa plant down there, there was even a possibility we feared of a hostage situation like the Reagan administration feared with the medical students in Grenada. So Clark goes down there in April of 1983, and by down there, I don't mean Suriname, but Suriname's neighbors, Brazil and Venezuela, to do everything he can to get Venezuela and Brazil involved in a way that would require us not to use military force.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that this was a very impressive operation that had been done where a Grenada wasn't pursued. A Grenada didn't happen.
So this is a
lesson
really.
That's good without force.
George Bush needed Bill Clark.
Well, actually, I'll tell you what. That's a good insight. George Bush could use a Bill Clark. And Clark comes from a long generation of ranchers and sheriffs and lawmen from California. I mean, his grandfather was a famous sheriff at the turn of the century, the early 1900s. Father was a famous sheriff. And Clark takes great pride in the fact that neither of these two ever killed a man as sheriff.
So you're suggesting that after Clark left his tenure with Reagan, that's when the Reagan foreign policy devolved into the what has been referred to as cowboy diplomacy by you know most Europeans, if not the domestic critics of Reagan.
Well, to an extent, and in fact, this is very interesting. Another reason we felt that we should write this book and tell this story is that many people believe, from the right to the left, from Lou Cannon to Cap Weinberger, that if Clark had stayed on at the NSC, the whole Iran-Contra thing may have never happened.
Well, I found that very interesting. I read the chapter in your book about Iran-Contra.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision to start selling weapons to Iran, so to supply weapons to Iran, happened in early 1981, within months after the election.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there were no U.S. hostages anywhere.
Right.
And in your book, you suggest that as this kind of came out in, what was it, 85, 86, as I recall, that, you know, there was this concern there were these hostages here and there. But the fact of the matter is that at the time the decision was made to exchange weapons for hostages, there were no hostages. And this has caused many people, including people like Barbara Honegger, who worked in the State Department, in Reagan's State Department, wrote a book about it,
mm-hmm.
To suggest that, in fact, this was payback for a deal that Bill Casey cut with the Iranians to hold on to the hostages through November and December, or through October and November of 1980 in order to help Reagan beat Jimmy Carter.
The October surprise.
Yeah. Well, and your book doesn't, you know, the timeline in your book doesn't refute that at all. I'm wondering, you know, obviously you're familiar with it.
Sure.
Why didn't you take it on?
Well, because...
Or do you think it's possible?
Sure. Well, all of 1981, Clark is at the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
1980, he's on the California Supreme Court, so he doesn't even get to Washington until February 1981. He's national security. Again, he's at the NSC for all of 1982 and most of 1983. So, I mean, without going into those specifics, all I can tell you is that Clark wasn't involved in those things.
Yeah. Well, what about, you know, Bill Casey? I mean, he was Reagan's campaign manager.
Right.
The day that he died, and in your book, you treat it very gently. I mean, there's just a couple of pages about it. You talk about he was a good guy and it was a tragic death. He had a seizure at his office at the CIA, fell on the floor, had a seizure. They took him to the I think it was Walter Reed, or it might have been the hospital in Baltimore. In any case, and they removed the part of his brain that was responsible for speech. They rendered him incapable of speech, and about 6 weeks later he died. That was the day, that afternoon, that he was supposed to testify about Iran-Contra. And his lawyer, Milton Gould, is on the record as saying that Bill Casey was going to say that he had participated with George Bush Sr. in basically cutting a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages to help Reagan win the election against Carter.
Well, look, if I was writing a book on Bill Casey, that would be in there. But the book is on Bill Clark.
Yeah.
And Clark's involvement with Iran-Contra, or non-involvement, is really picked back up in December 1986 when he's at a Department of Interior memorial occasion where they're unveiling his portrait and everything, and he gets asked about it for the first time. And then at that point, he comes in and starts urging Reagan to do pardons and that sort of thing.
Right.
I can only stick with Clark. I can't talk about Casey's involvement. I didn't even look into that. And I mentioned Casey, as you say, glowingly there in the end, but only because Casey is Clark's friend, and I'm telling the story of Clark's life.
And Casey's early life is, I mean, he was a real hero in his early life, you know, with the OSS and the CIA and everything. He did a lot of good stuff. Anyhow, the book is The Judge. It's about William P. Clark, Ronald Reagan's top hand, the author Paul Kengor. Paul, thanks for being with us today.
Okay, Tom.
Interesting conversation and an interesting book. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Sing a song of taxes. Working class cancer sore. Tea in Boston Harbor. Revolutionary war. Of giving to the rich and taking from the poor. Sing a song of taxes, let's even up the score. Sing a song of taxes in the presidential pew. Throw in grease senators and corrupt congressmen in the brew. Add a depraved governor, the Education Regency Board. A few greedy city council members and Attila the Hun's great horde.
21 minutes past the hour. Strange things out there in the world. Could be this from the blog of R.J. Shulman, the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch. As they say, don't let a day go by without PTSD. Anyhow, here's the headlines. Fox News documentary, Tom Hartman hugs trees, then writes countless books that causes them to be chopped down. The Post-Times Sun-Dispatch has learned that Fox News is going to air a half-hour documentary called Tom Hartman, Environmental Hypocrite and His Secret War Against Trees, in which the Air America talk show host is accused of promoting environmentally friendly positions, but then authoring a string of books that needed a slew of trees to be harvested for paper. Hartman has released Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, and Cracking the Code in just the last 2 years. If he loves the environment so much, says Britt Hume in the documentary, he shouldn't even be reading books, let alone publishing them, causing whole forests to be devastated. Bill O'Reilly says, just like that fake environmentalist Al Gore who uses electricity and flies on planes, Tom is one of those liberal hypocrites who wants to communistically stop the free market from making the best use of trees, but has no trouble when a tree is felled to make paper to be used to print their personal propaganda, which will find its way into the hands of all those people who don't listen to liberal talk radio. The documentary is set to air next Thursday, right before the documentary on John Edwards called John Edwards, Poverty-Supporting Hypocrite Who Refuses to Take a Vow of Poverty Himself. Yeah. Well, thank you, Bill O'Reilly.
And, all those clowns over at the liberal radio network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains?
Now, while, you know, Bill O'Reilly's little riff there is actually from Bill O'Reilly, the news story I just shared with you is from a spoof site, p-t-s-d.blogspot.com. And thanks to R.J. Shulman. Strange stuff. The real story behind the casualty rate in Iraq. By the way, I just want to close up this thing on Ronald Reagan. The continual reinvention of Ronald Reagan, who I think, in my opinion, was one of the worst presidents of the 20th century. The guy who began rolling back the New Deal. The guy who began the destruction of the middle class. The guy who began the policy, the modern day policy, of invading countries preemptively like Grenada. Yes, it was on a small scale, and yes, it was done for political purposes as a way of distracting people. The guy who may well have stolen the first major, serious, real, documentable election theft. And in fact, when Congress was empowered to investigate the Iran-Contra affair, the law that was passed that allowed the investigation specifically said that they could not look at anything that happened before 1982. So they could not look at whether or not the weapons that were being given to Iran were being given in exchange for Iran holding the hostages as opposed to releasing them. And so, anyway. The real story behind the falling casualty rate in Iraq, Brandon Friedman over at the Daily Kos, a great post, a great blog. What he's pointing out basically is that deaths are down in Iraq right now, and it appears that the reason why has nothing to do with anything that the United States has done. It has nothing to do with any surge. It has nothing to do with our activities. He says, instead, as the New York Times wrote, this is back in August 7th, the New York Times reported, first of all, that we were having, you know, fancy new roadside devices and all this, deadliest weapons yet used against us almost exclusively by Shiite militants. This was Muqtada al-Sadr's guys, al-Sadr. In response, 3 weeks after the New York Times article ran, 50 Muslim pilgrims were slaughtered in sectarian fighting in Karbala. So Muqtada al-Sadr announces that he had, quote, ordered his militia to suspend offensive operations for 6 months, end quote. And all of a sudden, U.S. deaths started dropping off. As Brandon Freeman points out in his blog over at the Daily Kos, he says, no one saw this coming. And then, again, quoting from the New York Times, a surprise statement regarding this notorious Mahdi army, which is responsible for much of Iraq's sectarian bloodletting, not only caught British and American commanders off guard, but appeared to have surprised Baghdad officials as well. We'll see. If it's good news, it's true. But if it happens to reduce if it happens, it will reduce violence in the country a great deal, is what Mufta al-Rabl, Iraq's national security advisor, said. So, you know, people saw this coming. And this was reported on August 3rd. Nobody really believed it. Nobody took it seriously. August, let's see, September, October, November. And apparently Sadr has done this. And as a consequence, American casualties are dropping. And Bush is claiming credit for it. And it's got nothing to do with Bush. Very much like Reagan used to, you know, oh, yes, we're going to take down the evil empire of the Soviet Union. I'm sorry, the Soviet Union was collapsing under its own weight. At what point are we just going to stop allowing the Republicans to reinvent history and start pointing out the realities of what have happened? You know, that for example, if Jimmy Carter had gotten reelected, if those hostages hadn't been held, because Carter was clearly the front runner right up until about the last 6 weeks, and it was the hostages that took him down. Carter had been reelected, we would not be in the Middle East right now because we would be oil independent. 27 minutes past the hour. Your call's up next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
My kids don't read and my kids don't write. I'm stuck in a traffic jam every night. The crime rate's up. But that's all right, 'cause I got low taxes. Low taxes like they have in Mississippi. Low taxes, that's what I live for. Low taxes. You bet your sweet Bippy, I hear those low taxes singing my song.
Yes, low taxes, ain't it great? Well, actually, it's low taxes for millionaires and billionaires. You know, Reagan doubled the Social Security tax on working people. But millionaires and billionaires saw no doubling of their taxes because back during Reagan's time, I think it was around $33,000, $34,000 a year you had to make at that time in the early 80s when he doubled the Social Security tax so that this would be the first generation that pays not only for its parents' retirement but also for its own by creating a savings account for itself, the baby boomers. And then Greenspan, a year later, when Reaganomics wasn't working and was going in the toilet, Greenspan said, well, you can just borrow from that Social Security Trust Fund. And they've been doing it ever since. Anyhow, Condi Rice has a legal advisor. Makes sense, right? Secretary of State should have a legal advisor. His name is John Bellinger. And he was in a debate sponsored by The Guardian, which is one of the top five major, you know, national newspapers in the United Kingdom. And I just want, before we go to your phone calls here, just want to play a very, very short clip from that conversation, from that debate between Philippe Sands of the, I believe, of the newspaper, and John Bellinger, the guy who advises Condi Rice on what's legal and what's illegal. And it's
truly bizarre.
Are there
any circumstances in which you could imagine the use of waterboarding to be consistent with international law?
Again, we've decided that, you know, we just don't want to get engaged in hypotheticals and applying the law to the facts.
Let me put it in yet another way. Could you imagine any circumstances in which the use of waterboarding on an American national by a foreign intelligence service.
One would have to apply the facts to the law, the law to the facts, to determine whether any technique, whatever it happened to be, was causing severe physical pain or suffering.
So you're willing to exclude any American going to the International Criminal Court under any circumstances, but you're not able to exclude the possibility of waterboarding being used on the United States national by a foreign intelligence service. I mean, that just strikes me as very curious.
Well, I'm not willing to include it or exclude it.
Yeah, he's so British. That strikes me as very curious. I say, what the heck are you saying? I can't believe I just heard that. And that's how an American would, you know. Speaking out of both sides of your mouth, are you, sir? Yeah. By the way, call Congress.org for the toll-free numbers for Congress, as well as the main switchboard number, which is 202-225-3121. Go to callcongress.org. Dennis Kucinich tomorrow is going to try to push forward his move to impeach Mr. Cheney and ultimately Mr. Bush, worthy of noting to your members of the House of Representatives. This is something that happens in the House, not the Senate. So you call your congressman or congresswoman. And also, Mr. Mukasey, we've got the senators, Democratic senators Feinstein and Schumer recently caved on this. I understand the political calculus here. I understand that having interim people filling the job who are probably even worse than Mukasey is a bad situation. I understand Bush will send somebody worse over and over and over again. I understand that you know, Mukasey, if he were to say, yes, waterboarding is torture, then he would be obligated to prosecute people within the administration that's putting him forward. So it's really an impossibility that he would even say that, or a virtual impossibility. You know, I understand all that. And I still think it's a shame that these senators are caving in. If they would just take a stand and say, yes, we know that actually in real politics, you know, in Henry Kissinger terms, that probably the appropriate political thing to do right now is to say, okay, Mukasey is better than somebody who's not as good. He's better than what everybody else that Bush might send us. He's not what we want on this particular topic, but we're going to put him in. I understand the political equation. I understand the practicality of it. But the reality is that most Americans, it's completely lost on them. Most Americans are not paying attention at that level. They don't have that level of political sophistication. And frankly, they don't care. They just know that this guy supports torture or is unwilling to condemn torture. And that now you've got Democratic senators saying, okay, fine, we're going to make him the attorney general. And if the Democrats want to win elections, if the Democrats want to stand for something, they need to stand for something, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's difficult, even when it makes things not work. And so I personally am very disappointed that these senators are going along with this and are apparently going to vote this guy out of committee and probably vote to confirm him on the floor of the House. I think it's a shame. And I've let my senators know, and I encourage you to do the same. Again, if you go to callcongress.org, it's just a little page on our website that has all the toll-free numbers for Congress. If you know of any more, you know, let me know. There's contact information there. And you just call Congress if you're not sure who your member of the House of Representatives is, or for that matter, if you're not sure who your senators are. You know, no blame. A lot of people don't know. If you simply tell them what state you live in, they'll tell you who your two senators are. Tell them what your zip code is. They will tell you who your member of the House of Representatives is, and then they will connect you because that's the main switchboard in Washington, D.C. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, Dick in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dick, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, you know, the historic analogy of the obstruction of justice with Carter's reelection by Reagan and Casey, and then later with Iran-Contra, I think it shows what happens, you know, when such criminality is not checked by our media and allowed to prevail. I mean, we saw it before with the Kennedy assassination cover-up that brought us Vietnam, and more recently the presidential election thefts in 9/11, which brought us the Iraq War. So I think that's why it's so graphically why it's so important to stop these political crimes instead of going along with their cover-ups and you know, we wind up with Pottersville or something worse, you know, if you don't check these things at the time.
Absolutely right, and it really started with Jerry Ford. Thank you, Dick. I mean, you know, Jerry Ford pardoning Nixon set an absolutely horrific precedent. It never should have been done. Excuse me. Never should have been done. And terrible and wrong thing. Jack in San Diego, California. Hey, Jack.
Yesterday, Musharraf delivered a speech in which he compared himself to Abraham Lincoln.
I know, by suspending habeas corpus. He says he's doing it in order to hold the Republic together. We're going to be talking about that, actually, in the next hour. If we can make our international phone lines work, we're going to be talking with a reporter in Pakistan.
Tom, and this is a speech that could only have been written by Karl Rove, a speech probably intended for George Bush, a speech that Bush may still give before he leaves office. And I just want to say that there's a move going on right now in the Pentagon to consolidate the power of all these private security firms. And I believe that if Bush was to ever declare martial law, he would use these firms like Titan and Custer's Battle and Blackwater to enforce the martial law. Is something we need to be aware of. And they're actually looking at a group called Aegis out of Britain. That they make no bones about it, that they are a mercenary group, that they will have oversight over these private security forums inside the United States.
Yeah. No, I am familiar with what you're talking about, Jack, and it does concern me. I'm not ready to go off, you know, on the hair on fire screaming edge of it, but I agree with you that we all need to be looking at this very carefully. I suspect, I mean, we're watching right now this incredible blowback. Musharraf has thrown into prison some 1,500 people so far that we know of. You know, odds are it's probably thousands. Protesters, his political enemies. He shut down television. He shut down landline communications for a while. He's got the members of the Supreme Court under guard. He immediately put the army around the Supreme Court building and then escorted them home. And all of their homes are under military guard, and their phone lines have been cut. And you know, could it happen here in the United States?
I think
the odds are slim, but I would not say that it could not happen here in the United States.
Well, Tom, here's what we need to be looking at. We need to get past the propaganda of the Bush administration. This is an administration that supports dictatorships like Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. They also lend foreign aid to India, Pakistan, and Israel. These are three countries with nuclear weapons that refuse to join the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty.
Right.
As they continue to proliferate, and the United States continues to aid and abet them in this process, these are three countries that have threatened and attacked their neighbors.
Yeah, well, at least one of them.
Hasn't India and Pakistan threatened each other with nuclear?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Attacked Lebanon and recently Syria? And ongoing attacks on the Palestinians.
Yes, and you could argue that those attacks are defensive. But you know, your point is well made, Jack. That these guys are not you, okay. Yeah, your point is well made. These guys are not signatories to the Nuclear Proliferation Agreement. And you know, so why are we helping them? Why are we giving why are we taking mangoes from India in exchange for nuclear technology? Hack in Oklahoma City. Got about a half a minute before the break machine is going to start here. Hack, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? O'Reilly actually made that argument? I mean, does anybody...
No, it was a spoof site.
I'll tell you, after all, this is faux news. We manipulate, you comply.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, it, what's so amazing is you can, like, read The Onion, or you can read satire sites, or like this, you know, ptsd.blogspot.com with all the dashes between the PTSD, and you read them and you go, huh, could be. I mean, the first time I read it, I thought, oh, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. And then you get it, you know, I mean, that's how bizarre reality has become, that a spoof site sounds real, because the real stuff that this administration, well, like Bellinger here claiming, if waterboarding, I don't know if we do that or not. Would you want an American to be waterboarded? Oh, well, can't have that. 45 minutes past the hour.
Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. Thursday, November 8th, Thursday of this week, here on this program, we're going to have both sides, pro and con, on the 9/11 truth debate. Kevin Ryan, the co-editor of the Journal of 9/11 Studies, and Michael Shermer of Skeptic Magazine are going to be having at it. I will be moderating that. And yes, I've gotten probably 100 emails from people saying, no, I should be the one speaking. we're trying to do our best here, folks. And I think this is going to be a great debate. Cracking the Code is available at 35% discount at Powell's Bookstores and online at powells.com, just as a heads up. And I will be doing a whole bunch of events around. This is my new book out called Cracking the Code. On the 5th, that's tonight, I'll be at Powell's Bookstore in Portland at 7:30 p.m. On the 9th, that's Friday of this week, we will be in Tempe for our listeners in Phoenix. You have to buy tickets in advance for this, and the tickets are available for sale at the website 1480kphx.com. On the November 12th, I'll be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at the White Dog Cafe, 6 o'clock for dinner, 7:30 for a talk on Cracking the Code. That's on Sansom Street in Philadelphia, November 12th. November 13th, I'll be at the Strand Bookstore in New York City. That's also going to be televised by C-SPAN for Book TV. Again, the Cracking the Code. That'll be at 7 p.m., the Strand on Broadway in New York City. On the 14th in New York, I'll be at Demos, a network for ideas in action, giving a speech on Cracking the Code, 5:30 p.m. And on November 16th in San Francisco, on Green 968 a.m., Little Fox Theater in Redwood City from 3:30 till 6. More information, go to quakeradio.com. On the 17th, we'll be at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in Carmel, California. And on the 29th of November in Los Angeles at 7:30 p.m. at Barnes & Noble. So a lot coming up. Just a quick heads up of the list. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Chris in Rochester, New York. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to add to your list of Reagan fallacies.
Okay.
You know, like Reagan took Iraq off the terrorist list, state-sponsored terrorist list. Reagan sent the Army intelligence officers into the Kurdish area to prove that the Iranians had gassed the Kurds. He took the solar panels off the White House and gutted all the energy independence research and put us on this course that we're on now.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my point. Had Reagan not been elected, had Jimmy Carter been reelected, and right up until the last week or so, the last few weeks, as the hostage crisis played out and there was the unsuccessful attempt to rescue the hostages, right up until that point, everybody assumed Jimmy Carter was going to become president, and Reagan was viewed by and large as a crackpot. In fact, his vice president had called his economic policies voodoo economics. Zeph in North Hollywood, California. Hey, Zeph.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I always thought that Bush, the junior, the guy we got now for president, was instructed by his father and those associates and cronies to take the White House and steal the White House specifically to cover up the deeds of his father and Reagan during the previous 12 years.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and that's one of the things he did. You know, variations on the Presidential Records Act and the executive orders, locking down all that stuff from the Bush-Reagan era. Absolutely, absolutely. I think Zeph, you're spot on, and I think that's why his father had his friends on the Supreme Court make his son president, because we have to keep in mind that I'm starting to think that maybe I should refer to him as King George III. He is our third George to be president, and he thinks he's a king and Lord Vader. Anyhow, King George and Lord Vader, he was not elected. He was appointed by the Supreme Court, and we should just, you know, point that out. Tomas in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Tomas.
How you doing there, man?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
You know, I have to go against you on your analysis of the casualties going down in Iraq there, buddy. I mean, you know, it was the whole world knows they went in for a surge, and now the casualties are going down. And that violence that you talked about where 50-some people died, that was because Mukada lost control of his militias, not because he had control.
So, interesting.
You know.
Yeah. Well, the big thing is now, I mean, we have 4.5 million people in Iraq who are displaced. It's the second largest refugee crisis in the world behind Darfur. And of course, when you ethnically cleanse a neighborhood, as is what has happened all across Iraq, entire communities, entire cities, entire large chunks of Baghdad, you ethnically cleanse an area, you're going to decrease the ethnic violence because you don't have people who hate each other, who are having the hatred of each other whipped up among them, living next to each other. So there's that. Plus, Sadr's declaring a 6-month ceasefire That's, let's see, that would be August, September, October, November, December, January, February. So in February, I guess that's going to expire, although solder could do anything. But, you know, you look at all these things, none of this has to do with the surge. I mean, Bush, we are not fighting a war in Iraq. That's the bottom line. The war was long over. The war was over when Bush correctly declared that the war was over. I mean, you know, it was just that was it. You know?
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
And that was the end of the war, and it has been an occupation ever since then. It's been a very badly done occupation. It's been an occupation that's being done on the backs of 4.5 million, not to mention all the others who have been killed, perhaps 1 million dead Iraqis, 4.5 million displaced Iraqis, just an absolute horrific situation. Pete in Bronx, New York. Hey, Pete.
Hey, how are you? You know, I wanted to ask about Harriet Myers, but first I wanted to say that we need you to step up and run for office.
No, you don't.
Oh, come on.
I think I do talk radio pretty good, and there's this old saying, you know, do what you do well, and I like writing, and I like doing talk radio, and I have tremendous respect for people who run for public office, but it's just not in my blood. So I think I can help best with the electoral process by, for example, you know, as we get into the election time this coming year, we will be doing the same thing we did 2 years ago, putting candidates for office, doing our Taking Your Country Back segments, things like that. Got about a half a minute here before we've got a break, Pete. What's up?
Well, tell me what these gutless bureaucrats are going to do about Myers thumbing her nose and not showing up.
Well, this is, again, where I think that we need to be contacting our senators and our members of Congress and saying,
and I have a million times.
Please enforce these subpoenas. Well, we need to just keep at it and visit them when they come into the district and talk to the people in the local party. And, I mean, the grassroots have to explode. I mean, that's the bottom line. The grassroots has to say, you know, it overwhelmingly across America, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. You know, we really need a Howard Beale moment in this country. And or a sustained one that lasts over a period of months. And I feel it building. I really do. Stick around.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program.